Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be here today to continue our discussion of cryptocurrency regulation. Today's webinar is the third of a series of webinars I'm giving on crypto regulation with specific reference to the Hong Kong regulatory regime for cryptocurrency. I'll be continuing with a detailed look at Hong Kong's crypto regulatory regime, in particular the regulatory status of cryptocurrencies and the SFC's existing framework for licensing virtual asset exchanges under the Securities and Futures Ordinance, where they trade at least one virtual asset that is a security. I'll conclude with a discussion of the new licensing regime for virtual asset exchanges under proposed amendments to the Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorist Financing Ordinance, the AMLO, and the Hong Kong Monetary Authority's proposals for regulated payment-related stablecoins. Firstly, let's look at the SFC's various statements on the regulatory status of virtual assets. As far back as September 2017, when the SFC issued its statement on initial coin offerings, ICOs, the SFC has focused on whether virtual assets are securities within the statutory definition, since this brings virtual assets within the SFC's regulatory remit. The SFC has said that a virtual asset that has the features of a traditional security, that is, a share, a debenture, or an interest in a collective investment scheme, will, unsurprisingly, be regulated as a security. The definition of securities in Schedule 1 to the SFO is wide, and it includes shares, debentures, bonds, or notes of any body, incorporated or unincorporated, government or municipal government authority, or any rights, options, or interests therein. Interest in a collective investment scheme, interests, rights, or property, whether in the form of an instrument or not, that are commonly known as securities, and structured products. There have been no Hong Kong court decisions on whether virtual assets are securities. Whether a virtual asset would be considered by a Hong Kong court to be an interest in a collective investment scheme is unclear. The key elements of the definition of a CIS under Schedule 1 to the SFO are that first, it must involve an arrangement in respect of property, which is broadly defined. Secondly, the participants in the CIS should not have day-to-day control over the management of the property, even if they have the right to be consulted or to give directions about the management of the property. Thirdly, the property should be managed as a whole by or on behalf of the person operating the arrangements, and or the participants' contributions and the profits or income from which payments are made to them are pooled. And finally, the purpose of the arrangement should be to provide participants with profits, income, or other returns from the acquisition or management of the property. There's no Hong Kong or UK case law which would assist in determining the questions surrounding whether virtual assets would constitute a collective investment scheme, nor has the SFC provided guidance on the factors it would take into account. As to the regulatory consequences of a virtual asset being a security, first, a public offering of a virtual asset that is a share or debenture will require compliance with the prospectus regime under the Companies Winding Up and Miscellaneous Provisions Ordinance, and the restrictions on public offering without SFC authorization under Section 103(1) of the SFO. However, Quampo's prospectus regime applies only to offerings by a company of its shares or debentures. On the face of it, the prospectus regime would not apply to the shares or debentures of decentralized autonomous organizations, which are often the issuers of tokens. Section 103 of the SFO applies simply to securities, and so invitations to the Hong Kong public to acquire virtual assets that are securities will need SFC authorization in the absence of an applicable exemption, irrespective of the corporate status of the issuer. A public offer of virtual assets which are interest in a collective investment scheme will need to be authorized by the SFC, which requires compliance with the stringent requirements of the SFC's code on unit trusts and mutual funds. People engaging in regulated activities in virtual assets that are securities, for example, dealing in or advising on securities or managing a fund that invests in securities, need to be licensed or registered by the SFC. The only SFC enforcement action to date involved its halting Blackcell Technology Limited's ICO in Hong Kong in 2018. However, this was a very clear-cut case of an offering in breach of Hong Kong securities laws, the tokens were exchangeable for shares in the ICO issuer, making the offer tantamount to a share offering in Hong Kong in breach of Section 103 of the SFO. The SFC's press announcement, however, referred to the ICO potentially amounting to a collective investment scheme and to the potential breach of SFO licensing requirements. The SFC did not, however, elaborate on why it considered the ICO to constitute a collective investment scheme. In any event, ICOs have virtually ceased in Hong Kong and are less popular in other jurisdictions. In July 2021, the SFC issued a warning statement about Binance, which is not licensed in Hong Kong, offering trading in stock tokens to Hong Kong investors. The SFC describes stock tokens as virtual assets backed by depository portfolios of underlying overseas listed stocks, where the stock token's price closely tracks the performance of the underlying stocks. Since they can be denominated in fractional units, the SFC views them as a way for investors to buy fractional rather than entire shares. The SFC considers that stock tokens are likely to be securities under the SFO, requiring any person intending to market and or distribute them, whether in Hong Kong or targeting Hong Kong investors, to be licensed by the SFC unless an applicable exemption applies. The SFC's statement on security token offerings issued in March 2019 describes securities tokens as digital representations of ownership of assets, for example, gold or real estate, or economic rights, for example, a share of profits or revenue, using blockchain technology. Securities tokens clearly encompass digital versions of traditional securities, such as shares, debentures, and interest in investment funds. However, the SFC did not elaborate on why digital representations of assets, such as gold or real estate, should be securities tokens. It may be alluding to what is essentially a tokenized real estate or gold fund, where money raised in a token offering is invested in gold or real estate, on the understanding that token holders will receive a share of the future proceeds of a sale of the gold or real estate when sold at a profit. In that case, the tokens would likely constitute securities as interest in a collective investment scheme. Alternatively, the SFC might be suggesting that tokens whose value or price is linked to the value or price of an underlying asset, such as gold or real estate, would be considered to be regulated investment agreements or structured products. The SFC statement on security token offerings sets out the SFC's requirements for parties involved in offering securities tokens. First, any person who markets or distributes securities tokens in Hong Kong or targeting Hong Kong investors must be licensed or registered for regulated activity. That's type one, dealing in securities. Secondly, licensed intermediaries should only offer securities tokens to professional investors. An offer of security tokens only to professional investors has the advantage of being exempt from the requirement for SFC authorization of any advertisement or invitation issued in relation to the offer under Section 103 of the SFO. Where STO tokens constitute interest in a collective investment scheme, restricting the offer to professional investors will mean that the requirements of the SFC's code on unit trusts and mutual funds will not apply. Intermediaries which market and distribute securities tokens are required to comply with the SFC's code of conduct, including the obligation under paragraph 5.2 to ensure that customer recommendations and solicitations in relation to security tokens are reasonably suitable for customers based on the information about customers of which intermediaries should be aware through the exercise of due diligence. The SFC's statement on security token offerings noted that where licensed intermediaries distribute security tokens, they need to conduct due diligence, which should cover, among other things, the background and financial soundness of the management, development team, and the token issuer, and of the rights attached to the assets backing the securities tokens. Intermediaries are required to review all materials published in relation to the STO, including the white paper and relevant marketing materials. The SFC regards securities tokens as complex products under paragraph 5.5 of the Code of Conduct, and under Chapter 6 of the Guidelines on Distribution and Advisory Platforms. Both set out additional investor protection requirements for complex products. The Statement on Security Token Offerings also requires licensed intermediaries to provide clients with information relating to SDOs to enable them to make informed investment decisions. This must include warnings of the risks of investing in virtual assets. Intermediaries must also ensure that information given to clients is accurate and not misleading. It also notes that intermediaries should consult with the SFC before engaging in activities relating to STOs. The SFC's regulatory approach to security token offerings is that the code of conduct requirements are aimed at ensuring investor protection, including the obligation to ensure the suitability of investment products for individual customers. And this is that these obligations apply only where a traditional intermediary is involved. The code of conduct doesn't apply to issuers of securities. However, traditional securities intermediaries, such as brokers, may not necessarily be involved in token offerings. Issuers, therefore, have no obligation under the SFC Code of Conduct to ensure the suitability of their tokens for prospective investors or to disclose the risks of investing in them under the Code of Conduct. However, the general law obligations under contract, tort, and criminal law in terms of areas such as misrepresentation and duty of care would, of course, apply where relevant. As regards non-fungible tokens or NFTs, the SFC issued its first statement regarding the risks of investing in NFTs in June 2022. According to the SFC statement, NFTs, which are genuine digital representations of a collectible, for example, a digital representation of a unique copy of an underlying asset, such as a digital image, artwork, music, or video, are currently unregulated in Hong Kong. However, if an NFT crosses the boundary between being a collectible and a financial asset, that is, if the NFT is structured in a form similar to interest in a collective investment scheme or other security, the SFC's regulatory regime would apply. An example of a regulated NFT would be one which represents a fractionalized or part interest in a physical artwork, which relies on an arranger to acquire the artwork and manage it, and to distribute the profits of its future sale to NFT holders. An interesting case is a Hong Kong NFT project, which is reportedly proposing to issue shares in virtual land in the metaverse. Each NFT in the form of a key would represent a percentage ownership of the project's total portfolio of virtual land, which the issuer will acquire from metaverse platforms, the sandbox and decentral land. The issuer will reportedly trade virtual land, rent it to tenants, and distribute the capital gains back to NFT holders. The issuer says that the NFTs are not a security, although the right to receive capital gains potentially raises questions as to the NFT's status as interest in a collective investment scheme if the other elements of the definition are met. Turning now to the regulation of crypto exchanges, the SFC introduced a regulatory framework for the regulation of centralized crypto exchanges under its position paper on virtual asset trading platforms in November 2019. This developed and replaced the conceptual framework laid out in the SFC's November 2018 statement, at least one digital asset that is a security. The difficulty for the SFC in responding to the risks posed by crypto exchanges is that its regulatory authority under the SFO extends to entities' activities in securities or futures contracts. Most cryptocurrencies, however, fall outside these definitions and are beyond the SFC's regulatory remit. The SFC's November 2019 position paper on virtual asset trading platforms, therefore, established a licensing regime for centralized trading platforms that trade at least one virtual asset that is a security under the SFO. If a platform trades at least one virtual asset that is a security, the SFC regulatory framework then applies to all the platform's operations, even where the majority of virtual assets traded are not securities. The licensing regime applies only to centralized virtual asset trading platforms operating in Hong Kong, that is, trading platforms that provide trading, clearing, and settlement services for virtual assets and have control of client assets. The SFC does not license platforms which provide peer-to-peer trading in virtual assets between clients, where the trade takes place off exchange and the clients retain custody of their virtual assets. Virtual asset trading platforms that are eligible for licensing are required to be licensed for Type 1, dealing in securities, and Type 7, providing automated trading services. The regulatory requirements for virtual asset platform operators draw on the SFC's requirements for traditional securities brokers and automated service providers, but are adapted to deal with virtual assets. Virtual asset trading platforms licensed under the framework must comply with conditions imposed on their license, which include a condition that they must comply with the SFC's standard terms and conditions for virtual asset trading platform operators. Breaches of the licensing conditions will constitute misconduct under Part 9 of the SFO and may also reflect adversely on the fitness and properness of the platform operator to remain licensed and result in disciplinary action by the SFC. Looking at the licensing conditions the SFC imposes on licensed operators of virtual asset exchanges. First, licensed platforms can only provide services to professional investors as defined in the SFO, including high net worth investors under the Securities and Futures Professional Investor Rules. The many Hong Kong platforms which provide services to retail investors are therefore ineligible for licensing. Secondly, the platform operator must obtain the SFC's approval before introducing or offering a new or incidental service or activity, making any change to an existing service or activity, or adding any product to its trading platform. Thirdly, licensed platform operators are required to provide the SFC with monthly reports on their business activities within 2 weeks after the end of each calendar month. They must also engage an independent professional firm to conduct an annual review of their activities and prepare a report confirming compliance with the licensing conditions and all relevant legal and regulatory requirements. As I just said, it is a licensing condition that the licensed platform operator must comply with the terms and conditions for virtual asset trading platform operators, which cover the major investor protection concerns, including the safe custody of assets, know your client requirements, anti-money laundering, market manipulation, risk management, and cybersecurity. Licensed platform operators must hold client assets on trust to provide safekeeping of client cryptocurrency and ensure that they are properly segregated from those of the platform operator. In particular, client virtual assets must be held through a company which is a Hong Kong incorporated wholly owned subsidiary of the licensed platform operator, which is an associated entity under the SFO and holds a trust or company service provider license under the AMLO. Licensed platform operators and their associated entities must store 98% of client virtual assets in cold wallets. That's where private keys are kept offline, and limit their holdings of client virtual assets in hot wallets. That's where private keys are kept online, rendering them vulnerable to external threats, to no more than 2%. Licensed platform operators must also minimize transactions out of the cold wallet, in which a majority of client cryptocurrency is held. Platform operators and associated entities are also required to have adequate processes in place for handling requests for deposits and withdrawals of client virtual assets to guard against loss arising from theft, fraud, and other dishonest acts, professional misconduct or omissions. The platform operator and its associated entity must also set out in writing details of the mechanism for transferring cryptocurrency between hot, cold, and other storage, and the procedures for dealing with events such as hard forks and airdrops from an operational and technical perspective. Licensed platform operators must have an insurance policy covering the risks associated with the custody of cryptocurrency held in both hot storage, full coverage, and cold storage, a substantial coverage, which is in effect at all times. The licensing conditions expect a licensed platform operator and its associated entities to set up and implement strong internal controls and governance procedures for private key management to ensure all cryptographic seeds and keys are securely generated, stored, and backed up. Licensed platform operators are required to take all reasonable steps to establish the full and true identity of each of their clients and each client's financial situation, investment experience, and investment objectives. Except for institutional and qualified corporate professional investors, as defined in the SFC Code of Conduct, before providing any services to a client, a platform operator must ensure that the client has sufficient knowledge of virtual assets, including knowledge of the risks associated with them. Where a client does not have that knowledge, services can only be provided to a client if the platform operator provides training to the client and inquires into the client's personal circumstances to ensure that its services are suitable for the client. Platform operators are also required to set a trading limit, position limit, or both by reference to the client's financial situation to ensure that the client has sufficient net worth to assume the risks and bear any potential trading losses. Licensed platform operators are required to establish and implement adequate and appropriate AML/CFT policies, procedures, and controls to counter the money laundering and terrorist financing risks associated with cryptocurrencies. Platform operators must also regularly review the effectiveness of their AML/CFT systems and effect appropriate improvements, taking into account any new SFC guidance and updates of the FATF recommendations applicable to cryptocurrency-related activities, including Recommendation 15 and its related interpretive note. Cryptocurrency tracking tools can also be used to trace transaction histories against a database of known addresses connected to criminal activities. Licensed platform operators are required to establish and implement written policies and controls for the proper surveillance of activities on their platforms in order to identify, prevent, and report any market manipulation or abuse of trading activities. They must also adopt an effective market surveillance system and give the SFC access to this system to perform its own surveillance. Licensed platform operators are required to exercise due skill, care, and diligence in selecting and appointing auditors to audit their financial statements and should take into account their experience and track record of auditing virtual asset-related business. Licensed trading platforms are required to have a risk management framework which enables them to identify, measure, monitor, and manage the full range of risks arising from their businesses and operations. Clients should pre-fund their own accounts as licensed platforms are prohibited from providing any financial accommodation for clients to acquire cryptocurrencies. Licensed platforms are prohibited from engaging in proprietary trading or market-making activities on a proprietary basis. If a platform plans to use market-making services to enhance liquidity in its market, this must be done at arm's length and be provided by an independent external party using normal user access channels. A licensed platform operator must also have a policy governing employees dealing in cryptocurrencies to eliminate, avoid, manage, or disclose actual or potential conflicts of interest. The terms and conditions prohibit licensed platform operators from offering trading or dealing in crypto futures contracts or related derivatives. A licensed platform operator also needs to establish and enforce strict criteria for including virtual assets on its platform and for withdrawing them from it. The platform operator is obliged to conduct reasonable due diligence prior to including a cryptocurrency on its platform. The due diligence should cover a number of specific areas, including but not limited to the background of the management or development team of the issuer, the regulatory status of the cryptocurrency in each jurisdiction in which the platform operator provides trading services, which include whether the cryptocurrency can be offered and traded under the SFO, the marketing materials, which should not be misleading, and the cryptocurrency's liquidity, market capitalization, and average daily trading volume. The licensing conditions also specify that in relation to cryptocurrencies, which are securities under the SFO, the licensed platform operator should only include those that are asset-backed, approved by or registered with regulators in comparable jurisdictions, as agreed by the SFC from time to time, and have a track record of 12 months or more since issue. Licensed platform operators are also required to submit to the SFC a legal opinion for each virtual asset that will be made available in Hong Kong, stating whether the virtual asset is a security under the SFO and the implications of that for the platform operator. The SFC describes the licensing regime under the SFO as an opt-in regime because crypto exchanges can choose to remain unregulated at the moment by not trading virtual assets that are securities. To date, the SFC has only licensed one virtual asset trading platform under the SFO, OSL Digital Securities Limited, although in April 2022, Hashkey Group reportedly secured an approval in principle from the SFC for its application of Hash Blockchain Limited to operate a virtual asset trading platform. One of the key difficulties in meeting the criteria for licensing is the requirement to trade at least one virtual asset that is a security. Part of the issue is that there have not been many offerings of tokenized shares of the kind seen in the US and some European countries. In July 2022, OSL Digital issued a press release to the effect that it had become the first SFC licensed intermediary to distribute security tokens in a privately offered STO. The security tokens represent units of a Bitcoin-linked US dollar interest-bearing bond. The first security token traded on OSL's platform was the BCAP token issued by Blockchain Capital Token Hub PTE, which holds interest in Blockchain Capital 3 Digital Liquid Venture Fund LP. According to OSL, the BCAP tokens provide indirect exposure to the venture capital fund through this structure. Another issue is the requirement that virtual assets, which are securities that are traded on the platform, must be asset-backed, be approved or registered with regulators in comparable jurisdictions as determined by the SFC, and have been issued more than 12 months previously. The SFC has provided no formal guidance on which virtual assets will be regarded as asset-backed. Presumably, this would include physically backed stable tokens such as Tether, although whether Tether is backed one-for-one by US dollars has been a matter of debate. Further, the SFC has not published a list of jurisdictions it regards as comparable. The requirement for the virtual assets to have been issued more than 12 months prior to their listing on the trading platform makes it difficult for most ICO tokens. As a result, despite many of the world's largest crypto exchanges operating in Hong Kong, they remain unregulated since they're outside the scope of the SFC's current licensing regime, as they only trade cryptocurrencies which are not securities under the SFO. However, a new licensing regime for virtual asset service providers, VASP, is due to come into effect on the 1st of March 2023. In Hong Kong under proposed amendments to the Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorist Financing Ordinance, the AMLO, which were introduced to Hong Kong's LegCo on the 6th of July 2022. The proposed amendments are included in the Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorist Financing Amendment Bill 2022. If passed, the bill will implement the Financial Action Task Force requirements that virtual asset service providers are subject to the same anti-money laundering and counter-financing of terrorism obligations as financial institutions and to a statutory licensing or registration regime. They will also implement the travel rule under FATF recommendation. The introduction of the amendments followed a public consultation by the FSTB, which concluded in May 2021. The amendment bill sets out certain key provisions of the new licensing regime, while the detailed regulatory requirements will be set out by the SFC following a further public consultation conducted after the enactment of the amended AMLO and before its implementation. The new licensing regime will apply to operators of trading platforms trading any type of virtual assets, which are not securities, subject to certain limited exceptions. Once the new regime is implemented, all centralized virtual asset trading platforms will need to be licensed by the SFC, either under the existing opt-in regime under the SFO or under the AMLO regime. The new licensing regime will require any person carrying on a business of providing a virtual asset service in Hong Kong or holding themselves out as doing so to be licensed as a VASP by the SFC. The only activity currently defined as providing a VA service is operating a VA exchange, although the Secretary for Financial Services and the Treasury will be able to amend that definition by notice published in the Gazette. Any person operating a VA exchange in Hong Kong will therefore need to apply for a license or cease operations in Hong Kong. The amendment bill contains transitional provisions for operators of VA exchanges carrying on business in Hong Kong before the 1st of March 2023, which I'll talk about in a moment. Operating a VA exchange will be defined as providing services through means of electronic facilities where offers to sell or purchase virtual assets are regularly made or accepted in a way that forms or results in a binding transaction. Persons are regularly introduced or identified to others so that they can negotiate or conclude, or with the reasonable expectation that they will negotiate or conclude, sales or purchases of virtual assets in a way that forms or results in a binding transaction, and where client money or client virtual assets comes into the direct or indirect possession of the person providing the service. The FSTB said in its May 2021 consultation conclusion that the new licensing regime would not cover peer-to-peer platforms, that is, platforms providing a forum where buyers and sellers of virtual assets can post bids and offers with or without automatic matching mechanisms, provided that the actual transaction is conducted off exchange and the exchange does not come into possession of any client money or virtual assets. Operators of peer-to-peer exchanges will therefore need to ensure that their Hong Kong operations do not bring them within the definition of a VA exchange. Virtual assets will be broadly defined as a cryptographically secured digital representation of value that is expressed as a unit of account or a store of economic value, either is used or intended to be used as a medium of exchange accepted by the public for payment of goods or services, for the discharge of a debt and or for investment, or provides rights, eligibility or access to vote on the management, administration or governance of the affairs in connection with or to vote on any change of the terms of any arrangement applicable to any cryptographically secured digital representation of value and can be transferred, stored or traded electronically. This definition would include Bitcoin, altcoins and, according to the SFTB consultation conclusions, stable coins, irrespective of the form of the underlying assets. Governance tokens are also potentially within the scope of this definition under paragraph 2b. The definition does not cover digital representations of fiat currencies, central bank digital currencies, financial assets already regulated under the SFO, such as securities and futures contracts, stored value facilities, which are separately regulated under the Payment Systems and Stored Values Facilities Ordinance, and limited purpose digital tokens, which include non-transferable, non-exchangeable and non-fungible closed-loop limited purpose items such as air miles, credit card rewards, gift cards, customer loyalty programs and gaming coins. The FSTB has not indicated whether or not non-fungible tokens, NFTs, would be within the definition. Given the rapid evolution of virtual assets, the amended AMLO will empower the SFC to prescribe characteristics that bring a crypto asset within or exclude it from the definition of a virtual asset by publication of notice in the Gazette. The Secretary for Financial Services and the Treasury will also be able to specify in the Gazette that a particular crypto asset or category of crypto assets is or is not a virtual asset. Existing virtual asset exchanges operating in Hong Kong immediately before the 1st of March 2023 will be able to continue to operate without a VASP license for up to 12 months, that's up to the 29th of February 2024. If they want to continue operation after February 2024, they will have to apply to the SFC for a VASP license. providing that an existing VA exchange submits its license application to the SFC on or before the 30th of November 2023, the VA exchange will be able to continue to operate after the 29th of February 2024 under a deemed license if its license application is still pending until the earlier of the SFC's grant or refusal to grant a license and withdrawal of the license application. To rely on this provision, the VA exchange's license application must confirm that it has been providing a VA service in Hong Kong immediately before the 1st of March 2023 and that with effect from the 1st of March 2024 it will comply and will have arrangements in place to ensure its compliance with the regulatory requirements applicable to licensed VASPs. VA exchanges considering entering the Hong Kong market should consider doing so as soon as possible in order to get the benefit of these transitional provisions. If an existing VA exchange withdraws its license application or is refused a VASP license, it will have 3 months to close down its operations in Hong Kong. During the closing down period, a VA exchange's activities must have the sole purpose of closing down the VA business. A VA exchange can apply to the SFC for an extension of the closing down period. The application must be made in writing within the closing down period. The amended AMLO will include similar transitional provisions for individuals who provide VA services on behalf of a VA exchange operating in Hong Kong immediately before the 1st of March 2023. The SFC will be able to issue a notice to any licensed applicant it considers unsuitable for licensing, informing them that they will not have deemed licensed status. Hong Kong incorporated companies which have a permanent place of business in Hong Kong and overseas companies which are registered under the Hong Kong Companies Ordinance, CAP 622, will be eligible to be licensed as VASPs. Businesses without a separate legal personality, such as partnerships and sole traders, individuals and overseas companies that are not registered in Hong Kong, will not be able to obtain a VASP license in Hong Kong. VASP licensing applicants will be required to appoint at least two responsible officers who will be generally responsible for overseeing the operation of the licensed VASP and ensuring compliance with the AML, CFT and other regulatory requirements. The requirements for the responsible officers of the VASPs mirror those for the responsible officers of licensed corporations under the SFO and require that at least one responsible officer must be an executive director of the VASP. If the VASP has more than one executive director, they must all be appointed as responsible officers. At least one responsible officer must be ordinarily resident in Hong Kong, and at least one responsible officer must be available at all times to supervise the business of the VA service. Individuals who will provide VA services on behalf of a VASP, including those who will be its responsible officers, will need to be approved by the SFC as licensed representatives accredited to the VASP. An applicant for a VASP license, its responsible officers, licensed representatives, directors, and ultimate owners will be required to satisfy a fit and proper test. Ultimate owner is defined to include any individual who owns or controls, directly or indirectly, more than 25% of the issued share capital of the VASP, controls directly or indirectly more than 25% of the voting rights at its general meetings, or controls its management. The factors which the SFC will take into consideration in determining whether a person is fit and proper are modelled on the fit and proper requirements for licensed corporations, their responsible officers and licensed representatives under the SFO. They include the person's financial status or solvency, their educational or other qualifications and experience, evidence of their competence, honesty and financial integrity, their conviction in Hong Kong or elsewhere for any money laundering or terrorist financing offence or other offence involving fraudulent, corrupt or dishonest conduct, and failure to comply with the AML CFT obligations or other obligations of licensed VASPs. Applicants for a VASP license will have to seek the SFC's approval for the premises to be used for keeping records or documents required to be kept under the AMLO. The premises must be non-domestic premises suitable for storing relevant documents and records. VASP licenses granted by the SFC will be open-ended, that is, they will continue unless revoked by the SFC, for example, because of misconduct or the VASP ceasing operations. Licensed VASPs will be subject to the AML and CFT requirements of the AMLO, including the customer due diligence and record-keeping requirements set out in Schedule 2 of the AMLO. In the case of non-compliance by a VASP with the statutory AML and CFT obligations, both the VASP and its responsible officers will commit an offence carrying maximum penalties of a $1 million Hong Kong dollar fine and 2 years imprisonment, or 7 years imprisonment if the non-compliance is committed with intent to defraud. Licensed VASPs will have to comply with a stringent set of requirements which the SFC will impose as license conditions. The matters that may be covered by license conditions are broad in scope and include the VASP's financial resources, knowledge and experience, risk management policies and procedures, management of client assets, virtual asset listing and trading policies, financial reporting and disclosure, prevention of market manipulation and abusive activities, and avoidance of conflicts of interest. Licensed VASPs will only be allowed to provide services to professional investors, at least during the initial stage of the licensing regime. This restriction will not be included in the legislation, but will be imposed as a licensing condition, which will make it easier to remove in the future. The FSTB and SFC have said that they will monitor the market and review the position regarding retail investors as the market matures. Any person who proposes to become an ultimate owner of a licensed VASP must be approved in writing by the SFC. The SFC will need to be satisfied that the VASP will continue to be fit and proper if the ultimate owner is approved. In granting its approval, the SFC may impose conditions on the licensed VASP or the ultimate owner. A person who becomes the ultimate owner of a VASP without the SFC's approval, without reasonable excuse, will commit an offence for which the maximum penalty is a fine of $1 million Hong Kong dollars, 2 years imprisonment, and a further fine of $5,000 Hong Kong dollars per day for every day that the offence continues. A licensed VASP will be required to submit an annual return and pay an annual fee to the SFC within 1 month of each anniversary of the date of the grant of its license. Licensed VASPs and their associated entities, that's their Hong Kong incorporated wholly owned subsidiaries that receive or hold client assets, will be required to appoint an auditor within 1 month of the grant of the VASP license and file audited financial statements with the SFC within 4 months of the end of their financial year. The SFC will need to be notified of various matters, including any change in any information provided by the licensed VASP or its ultimate owner, an intention to cease business as a VA service provider, a change in the address at which a VA service is provided, a change in the VASP's directors, an auditor of a licensed VASP or an associated entity ceasing to act, and a licensed representative ceasing to act for a licensed VASP. The amended AMLO will include various offences punishable by fines and or imprisonment, which are aimed at enhancing investor protection. It will be an offence to carry on a business of providing a VA service in Hong Kong or to hold oneself out as doing so without a licence. It will also be an offence for a person to actively market a VA service that provides outside Hong Kong to the Hong Kong public without a VASP licence. These offences will carry maximum penalties of a Hong Kong dollar $5 million fine and 7 years imprisonment, and a daily fine of $100,000 Hong Kong dollars for each day that the offence continues. It will be an offence for an unlicensed person to issue or possess for the purpose of issue any advertisement which holds a person out as prepared to provide a VA service. The offence carries sanctions of a $50,000 fine and 6 months imprisonment. Making a fraudulent or reckless misrepresentation to induce an acquisition, disposal, subscription, for or underwriting of any virtual assets will be an offence whether the transaction takes place on a licensed VA exchange or not. The offence will carry maximum penalties of a $1 million Hong Kong dollar fine and 7 years imprisonment. A person will commit an offense if in a transaction involving virtual assets, the person employs any device, scheme, or artifice with intent to defraud or deceive, or engages in any fraudulent or deceptive act, practice, or business. Maximum penalties for this offense are a $10 million fine and 10 years imprisonment. The SFC will have broad supervisory powers to enforce the AML-CTF regulations and other regulatory requirements under the revised AMLO. It will be able to enter the business premises of licensed VASPs and their associated entities to conduct routine inspections, request production of documents and records, and investigate breaches. Similar to the SFC's power to sanction licensed persons under sections 194 and 196 of the SFO, the SFC will be able to sanction a licensed person who breaches any provision of the AMLO or who it considers not to be fit and proper to remain licensed. Possible sanctions include a reprimand, an order to take remedial action, a fine for up to the higher of $10 million, and 3 times the profit gained or loss avoided, and suspension or revocation of a person's license. The SFC will also be able to appoint an auditor to conduct an investigation into the affairs of a licensed VASP and its associated entities where it has reason to believe that there has been a breach of the AMLO or any code or guideline published under it. In addition, the SFC will be given intervention powers to impose restrictions and prohibitions on the operations of a licensed VASP and its associated entities in certain circumstances, for example, where it's necessary to protect client assets. A new Section 13A will be added to the Schedule 2 to the AMLO, which will require financial institutions, which will include licensed VASPs, to obtain and pass on information in relation to transfers of virtual assets. The originating financial institution will be required to obtain and record identifying information for the originator and the recipient and to submit the information to the beneficiary institution. A financial institution that acts as an intermediary institution in a virtual asset transfer must submit all the information it receives with the transfer to the institution to which it passes on the transfer instruction. For transfers of virtual assets amounting to $8,000 or more, the originating financial institution must obtain and submit to the beneficiary institution the names of the originator and beneficiary, their account number with the institution from or to which the virtual asset transfer is made, or if there's no such account, the unique reference number assigned to the virtual asset transfer by the relevant institution, and the originator's address, customer's ID number or ID document number, or date and place of birth if it's an individual. The same information needs to be obtained and submitted for virtual asset transfers of less than HK$8,000, except the information which I just referred to. The HKMA published a discussion paper on crypto assets and stablecoins on the 12th of January 2022, seeking feedback on its proposed regulation of payment-related stablecoins. The HKMA said that while payment-related stablecoins may be or become an accepted means of making payments, they may fall outside the scope of Hong Kong's current regulation. Stablecoin arrangements may fall outside the scope of the stored value facility licensing regime under the Payment Systems and Stored Value Facilities Ordinance, notwithstanding that they operate in a manner similar to that of a stored value facility. Under the Stored Value Facility Ordinance, a facility is a stored value facility if it can be used for storing the value of an amount of money that is paid into the facility from time to time and may be stored on the facility under the rules of the facility and for either or both of certain purposes, which are as a means of making payments for goods or services under an undertaking, express or implied, given by the issuer of the facility, or as a means of making payments to another person, other than the payments I've just mentioned, under an undertaking, express or implied, given by the issuer of the facility. The issue of a stablecoin or other virtual asset which meets these criteria and constitutes the issue of a stored value facility in Hong Kong has to be licensed by the HKMA and comply with the Stored Value Facility Ordinance and other requirements set out by the HKMA. However, the HKMA has said that the definition of stored value facility may not cover certain types of stable coins and or their activities in the market. For a facility to be a stored value facility, the two limbs of taking stored value by a facility issuer and the same issuer giving an undertaking for making person-to-merchant or person-to-person payments using the stored value must be satisfied. In a stablecoin arrangement, different entities may perform the respective functions of stablecoin issue and wallet operations, and the issuer will not necessarily undertake to use the stablecoin as a means of payment for a third party. Also, various key functions involved in typical stablecoin arrangements may not be covered by the proposed FASP licensing regime. These functions include the issue and redemption of tokens, transaction execution, token custody and operation, value stabilization and reserve management, transaction validation, and fund transmission. The HKMA is proposing a risk-based approach, which will initially focus on activities relating to payment-related stablecoins. The regulatory emphasis will be on asset-linked stablecoins. For example, a stablecoin whose value is linked to a specific fiat currency, rather than algorithm-based stablecoins, which typically use protocols altering stablecoin supply in response to changes in demand to maintain a stable value. This is because most stablecoins are currently asset-linked and are mainly pegged to the US dollar. Asset-linked stablecoins also appear to be more popular than algorithm-based stablecoins and more likely to become widely adopted as a means of payment, therefore having greater potential for being incorporated into mainstream finance. Recognizing the possibility that other types of stablecoins, for example, algorithm-based stablecoins, may need to be regulated in future because of the potential risks they may pose for Hong Kong's monetary and financial stability, the HKMA wants a flexible regime that can be modified in future as necessary. The HKMA proposes that certain activities relating to stablecoins will require licensing by the HKMA. This would require expanding the scope of existing legislation, for example, the Stored Values Facilities Ordinance, or enacting a new law. Since stablecoin arrangements usually involve more than one entity, multiple entities in a stablecoin arrangement may need to seek HKMA authorization. The proposed regulated activities relating to stablecoins include issuing, creating, or destroying stablecoins, that's the issuer minting and burning stablecoins, managing reserve assets to stabilize the value of stablecoins, that's managing the reserve assets that back the value of the stablecoins, and providing custody or trust for these assets. Validating transactions and records, that's authorizing or verifying the validity of transactions and records. Storing the private keys, providing access to stablecoins. That's safekeeping of the keys used to digitally sign transaction instructions on behalf of stablecoin holders. Facilitating the redemption of stablecoins, that's facilitating stablecoin holders' redemption of their stablecoins for fiat currencies or other assets. Transmissions of funds, that's ensuring the accurate and final settlement of transactions to minimize the risk of default by counterparties. And executing transactions in stablecoins, that's conducting transactions on behalf of others. The HKMA proposes to apply high-level regulatory requirements to stablecoin-related activities. These would be applied using a risk-based approach rather than a one-size-fits-all basis. Since multiple entities are often involved in a stablecoin arrangement, the entities involved could be subject to part or all of the requirements, depending on the actual stablecoin-related services they offer. Under the new licensing regime, entities who want to conduct certain activities crucial to the operation of a stablecoin arrangement will need to be authorized by the HKMA. And the HKMA will develop these authorization requirements in law, and relevant licensed institutions will be expected to comply with the authorization requirements on an ongoing basis after authorization to ensure the safety and soundness of the scheme. The HKMA proposes to impose regulatory requirements on entities conducting stablecoin-related activities, including prudential requirements. The HKMA is proposing to impose prudential requirements which will require licensed entities to have adequate financial resources and liquidity. They will also be required to manage their capital and liquidity adequately and effectively to protect users and financial stability, fit and proper tests for management and owners, the controllers, including shareholder controllers and indirect controllers, and senior management of licensed entities will need to meet a fit and proper test, maintenance and management of reserves of backing assets. Licensed entities will be required to comply with requirements regarding the nature and sufficiency of the stablecoin arrangements reserve assets to support and stabilize the value of the outstanding stock of stablecoins. They will also be subject to requirements to ensure the clarity and enforceability of legal claims. The titles, interests, and other rights of stablecoin holders in relation to the stablecoin issuer and the reserves backing it. Systems, controls, governance, and risk management requirements. Licensed entities will be required to put in place a sound risk management framework to comprehensively manage legal, credit, liquidity, operational, AML, and other risks of the stablecoin arrangement. The stablecoin arrangement's ownership structure and operation will need to feature clear and direct lines of responsibility and accountability, especially when it is owned and administered by one or more responsible legal entities. Licensed entities will be required to comply with the AML and CFT rules, and licensed entities will need to ensure the clarity, robustness, and timeliness of the process for redeeming stablecoins for other liquid assets. Licensed entities will also be subject to financial reporting requirements and will have to make disclosures to regulators and users and grant specific rights to users. Safety, efficiency, and security requirements. Licensed entities will be required to put in place sufficient safeguards against cybersecurity, operational, and business continuity risks. They will also need to ensure that a stablecoin arrangement provides for clear and final settlement, irrespective of the operational settlement method adopted. The HKMA is proposing that any entity wanting to conduct any of the regulated stablecoin-related activities in Hong Kong will need to be incorporated in Hong Kong and licensed by the HKMA to conduct the relevant activity. The new regulatory regime will also prohibit the active marketing of stablecoin-related activities to the Hong Kong public by an unlicensed entity. So a foreign company or group will need to incorporate a Hong Kong company to apply for an HKMA license to provide regulated stablecoin-related activities in Hong Kong. Just a Hong Kong branch or office of a foreign company will not be licensed by the HKMA. After receiving feedback on the discussion paper, the HKMA will consider whether it needs to issue additional documents on specific aspects of the regulatory framework in 2022 or 2023. And it plans to implement the new regime no later than 2023 to 2024. On the question of whether stablecoin issuers should be required to be authorized institutions under the banking ordinance, the HKMA says that it proposes to draw reference from relevant international standards and recommendations, such as those of the Financial Stability Board and the Bank of International Settlements. Given the payment-related nature of stablecoin arrangements, the HKMA expects that the proposed regime's rules and requirements would take relevant aspects of Hong Kong's current approach to SVF and payment regulation as a minimum to avoid regulatory arbitrage. Under a risk-based approach, the HKMA considers that stablecoin issuers should be subject to higher prudential requirements to protect users. That brings us now to the end of the webinar, so thank you again for joining me today. And I do hope that I will see you again at some future webinar. And thank you very much for joining me today. Bye.